That's kind of how it works with the Christmas story, too. In fact, some people don't believe the Christmas story, and it's kind of an important part of our faith, but there are those that do not believe the account that we have in Matthew and Luke and some of the stories leading up to it. They just don't believe the Christmas story because it's so unbelievable. In fact, they think maybe Jesus arrived and just kind of showed up, started doing some really cool stuff, and then they gave him a cool backstory for, you know, like street credit. But it's actually the fact that the story is so remarkable, and that's what makes it believable. We always consider the Christmas story kind of starts with an angel and with Mary and Joseph and an announcement. But the Christmas story does not begin with a couple figuring out how in the world they got pregnant. It actually starts much sooner than that with a couple that didn't know if they would ever get pregnant. We think about angels and proclamations, but the Christmas story really starts with a promise. It was a promise, and it was a very unique promise, and it had some very unique characteristics. It was a promise from God, and the characteristics of this promise, of God's promise that he gave, was that it was unbelievable, that it was incoherent, that it was impossible. Unbelievable because nothing like it had ever happened. Impossible because there's just no way that it could be pulled off, and incoherent because even the people receiving it didn't know what to make of it. And it's that type of promise, it's this type of promise that would set up Christmas. And it's actually this promise that makes Christmas more believable. But it had people following a recipe and they weren't quite sure how it was going to end up at the end. We think about Christmas being about 2,000 years ago with the arrival of Christ on the scene, but it was actually 2,000 years before that. The best guess we have is about 2090 BC that Christmas really began. And Christmas began with a story in Genesis. The story starts in Genesis chapter 12, verse 1. It says, "Now the Lord said to Abram, 'Go from your country and your kindred and your father's house to the land that I will show you.'" Now, Abram, we know, will eventually become Abraham, but this is how Christmas starts, with God telling a man to leave what you know and go elsewhere. And we're not quite sure why God chose Abram, but he spoke to him and he said, "Go, leave your family and go to a land I will show you." Now, this was particularly dangerous because in those times, your safety and your security was with your people, with your clan, with your tribe. You did not venture off from what you know. And you certainly didn't venture off without a destination. God tells Abram, leave what you know, and when you get there, there you'll be. You'll know. Just keep going. I'll tell you when to stop. Verse 2 says, "And I will make of you a great nation. I will bless you and make your name great so that you will be a blessing." Now, Abram is approximately 75 years old when God is speaking to him. And he has no children. The idea of him being a great nation is a little far-fetched. He will not even be a great grandfather or even a great dad. How in the world will my name be great? In fact, if I do what you're telling me to do, if I leave everybody that I know, my name will not be great. My name will be forgotten. Because the only security I have in any legacy whatsoever is with my clan right here. And God continues this remarkable promise. Verse 3 says, "I will bless those who bless you, and him who dishonors you I will curse, and in you all the families of the earth shall be blessed." God looks to Abram and says, "I am forever yours. I am going to be a part of your story, and there is nothing that is going to stop it." And this is so peculiar. That's what makes it so incoherent. Because if you know anything about the Old Testament, or even if you know anything about ancient history, people did not bless people. Nations did not bless nations. Tribes did not bless other tribes. People plundered people. Nations conquered people. Tribes attacked tribes. But people didn't bless people. And so this man with no children is somehow going to be a great nation. And for whatever reason, Abram believed the promise. We know, if we studied the Old Testament a couple months back with a few stories, and we know kind of how that family tree pans out a little bit. If you follow the family tree, Abraham did in fact have a son. His name was Isaac. Isaac had a couple sons. One of them was named Jacob. And this is the family in which God would bless every nation. It's an interesting family. We talked a few months ago about how dysfunctional the family was. Abraham lied about his wife and just told people that she was his sister. And you know how sometimes we'll be talking about Old Testament stuff, and I was like, you know, that wasn't weird then. It just seems weird now. No, that was weird then. That's just weird no matter what century you put that in, to tell people that your wife is your sister. Jacob, we know he swindled his way into this lineage, right? Esau should be listed up there, but Jacob worked his way in and got the blessing and got the birthright. Jacob had a son named Joseph whose brothers couldn't figure out whether they should kill him or sell him. So they sold him just because it was slightly more lucrative. And this is the family that God chose to bless every nation. If you know the story, you know that through Joseph and through that story, the entire family migrated to Egypt, and God's promise was fulfilled. They became a great nation. A great nation of slaves. They could not bless others because they could not bless themselves. And people had heard the stories they knew from their parents, from their grandparents, from their great-grandparents, these stories of Father Abraham. Perhaps they sang songs about his many sons with motions. We still carry on to this day. If you don't know what that's about, you need to go to Sunday school. But the people look around and say, God, you promised that we would be a great nation, but we're a great nation of slaves. We're in no position to bless anyone. God sent a deliverer by the name of Moses. And we always look at that story from Moses' perspective, how he freed the people and how they got out of Egypt. But trust me, if you were to ask the people of Egypt, they would not tell you that the nation of Israel blessed them. And as they entered into the promised land, as we read the last part of the books of Moses and we get into Joshua, and as Joshua led his campaigns and conquered the lands, if you were to ask the Canaanites if they felt blessed by the Hebrew people, they would say no. And 1,000 years of history passes. And onto the pages of history step King David, the warrior king. King David steps on the scene, and we finally have a kingdom and a king, the kingdom of Israel. King David did peace treaties, settled disputes, so there was finally peace between people that there had never been peace. And then Solomon, David's son, takes the throne. He was the builder king. He was wise, one of the wisest men to ever live. He constructed a huge temple. He constructed all these things. People came from far and wide to hear of the wisdom of Solomon and see the greatness of his kingdom. And God fulfilled a promise. It was a promise to Solomon, because Solomon married foreign women and worshiped foreign gods. And God promised Solomon, if you do that, I will divide your kingdom. And so just when Israel was finally in a place where, you know what, maybe the promise will come true, maybe we will bless other nations, Solomon forsook God and the kingdom was divided. Israel to the north and Judah to the south. And over the course of 200 or 300 years, Assyria conquers the northern kingdom. The southern kingdom, Judah, is on the brink of destruction. A once mighty kingdom that could finally fulfill God's promise and finally bless other nations is on the brink of destruction. And in the midst of this destruction, the prophet Isaiah emerges onto the scene. You heard some of Isaiah's prophecy as the candle was lit, prophecies of a prince of peace that would arrive. A wonderful counselor. Isaiah also prophesied in Isaiah 49:6, speaking to the Hebrew people, said, I will make you as a light for the nations, that my salvation may reach to the end of the earth. I'm going to do something through you that all people will look in your direction. And I say, come on, this has to be a joke. We can't light up a room. We can't light up ourselves. How in the world are we going to be a part of saving any nation, especially multiple nations? Soon after this prophecy, that you will be a light to all nations, the southern kingdom, Judah, was conquered. Babylon conquered Assyria. The temple was destroyed. And in the midst of all this destruction, God sends another prophet, the prophet Malachi, who speaks in Malachi chapter 1, verse 11, says, from the rising of the sun to its setting, my name will be great among the nations. And at this point, they've got to think, no, no, it won't. Your name is being mocked. Your name is a joke to other nations. No one wants to worship a God that can't take care of his people. We can't feed ourselves. We can't protect ourselves. We're never going to be a blessing to anyone. Maybe Zeus, maybe his name will be great among all the nations. Maybe Jupiter, there's a guy from Greece coming along the way in a couple hundred years, Alexander the Great. Maybe his name. But not the name of our God. Nobody wants to worship our God. Second half of verse 11 says, in every place, incense will be offered to my name and a pure offering. For my name will be great among the nations, says the Lord of hosts. With incense, that's a symbol of worship, saying everywhere that people gather to worship, there will be a group that worships me. That was the prophecy in the midst of destruction. And finally, in 63 BC, Pompey conquered the entire area on behalf of Rome. That happened during an interesting peace. Everybody has it in their Bible, even if you don't know it. If you look between Malachi and Matthew, there's generally a blank piece of paper. It might say New Testament on it, telling you what's coming, but there's a blank piece of paper. Because for 400 years, there was spiritual silence. God didn't say anything. The Assyrians were conquered by the Babylonians by the Persians by the Greeks by the Romans. And God's people were once again in darkness, thinking that there was a promise that had been made that was not going to be fulfilled. In fact, the promises almost seemed like they had been altered. There had been altered promises made to them. I will not be a blessing. Your name will not be great in all the nations. All of the altered promises. But then something happened. When everything was exactly how it should be, when the promise seemed as far as it could possibly be, when God had the undivided attention of the world, it said in when Paul says, talks about it in Galatians chapter 4, he says, but when the fullness of time had come, God sent his son. When everything was as it should be, because of Rome, there was a transportation system in place, the likes of which the world had never seen before. There was a seaport system in place, the likes of which the world had never seen before. There was Pax Romana, which is something you may have studied in school. It was essentially the peace of Rome. Warring countries that had been at war forever, Rome had just kind of annexed everything. And the time was just right for God to have their undivided attention. The time was just right for this story to spread farther and wider than it ever could ever before. And it was at that time that Luke tells us, in the sixth month, the angel Gabriel was sent from God to a city of Galilee named Nazareth, to a virgin betrothed to a man whose name was Joseph, of the house of David. And the virgin's name was Mary. And everyone knows that. If you've been in church for 5 minutes or 5 years or your entire life, you know the name was Mary. And if you've never stepped foot in a church, you know the name was Mary. How'd that happen? Verse 28 says, "And he came to her and said, 'Greetings, O favored one. The Lord is with you.'" And she's got to think, you know what? No one in this part of the world has felt like God was with them in a very long time. The angel said to her, "Do not be afraid, Mary, for you have found favor with God. And behold, you will conceive in your womb and bear a son, and you shall call his name Jesus. He will be great and will be called the Son of the Most High. And the Lord God will give to him the throne of his father David, and he will reign over the house of Jacob forever, and of his kingdom there will be no end." Even if this didn't make sense at the time to Mary, God fulfilled his complete promise that every nation in the world, through Abraham, would be blessed by the arrival of Jesus, the Prince of Peace. God made a promise. He looked down into history and said, "I am going to be a part of your story faithfully. I am forever yours." And it might seem dark and it might seem like it's never going to happen, but God always keeps his promises. And through Jesus, the arrival of the Prince of Peace. Israel would, in fact, be a light to the Gentiles. And do you know how I know that? Most of you sitting here, if not all of you sitting here, are Gentiles. And we worship a Jewish Savior. The story of God's faithfulness is a story that doesn't just cover us in the 21st century, and it doesn't even start at Jesus' birth. It is a 4,000-year story of God's faithfulness. And the story continues. Anytime we celebrate Advent, anytime we look at Jesus' first arrival, we always have a distant look at his second advent, his second arrival. And when he's speaking to his disciples in John chapter 14, he says, "Peace I leave with you. My peace I give to you. Not as the world gives do I give to you. Let not your hearts be troubled, neither let them be afraid. I am the Prince of Peace, promised for years and years, fulfilled through the prophecies. And I'm going to go away, and I'm going to leave you the very thing I brought. I'm going to leave you peace. And it won't be the type of peace that perhaps Israel or the Hebrew people or even you and I have searched after. It's not peace that's tied up in kings and rulers and accomplishments. This is the Prince of Peace. This is a different peace, the kind of peace that can't be replicated by what the world has to offer. My peace, Jesus says, is what keeps this story going. And we cannot find that anywhere but through the Prince of Peace, the Jesus of Christmas. We try. We write about it. We sing about it. We look for it in every avenue. In fact, the song that I've kind of framed this conversation around, "Forever, Forever, Faithfully, I'm Forever Yours." It's a song written by a keyboard player by the name of Jonathan Cain. He wrote such beautiful lyrics as, "I am lost without you. I get the joy of rediscovering you every day." He wrote it to his wife. It was released in 1983, the same year that they divorced. Which would be funny if it wasn't true. Now, that's not to say we shouldn't put effort or energy or even faith in relationships or put faith in successes and accomplishments. But Jesus says, "My peace, the peace that I will give you, is so different than all that. It's different than what's out there because this is a peace where you can say, 'Let not my heart be troubled. I will not be afraid. And if you're going to keep my story going, you will need that kind of peace. There are different ways we keep this story going. I'm going to show you one right now.
God's already promised his kingdom is coming. He's going to establish his reign on this earth. But we have to choose to do exactly what he's asking us to do, to make a difference for his kingdom through his power. My hope is that we're going to see God's kingdom built and established in Nepal. Most of the highest mountains in the world, it's where the Tibetan people are. A little over 20 ethnic Tibetan groups throughout Nepal. So I just kept thinking, somebody needs to go to these people. God was saying, yes, somebody does need to go. That person is you. God's called us to go as a family.
Having kids is such an extra blessing. God uses them in so many incredible ways.
Some of our areas takes over 2 weeks of travel. Landslides happen and block the way. Weather changes, and on a dime, we can get caught in the snow. They don't stop us from sharing the gospel.
To be Tibetan is to be Tibetan Buddhist.
Underneath there's a lot of emptiness. There's just so much suffering in this life, and the only way not to suffer is to not exist. There's no security, no way to be sure what's going to happen. No! 4 months after we came, the house started shaking. We were coming off the ground, up and down. We went outside, and at that point, it became real what had happened. At the time of the earthquake, one village had been completely covered.
A glacier broke, caused this huge landslide.
Covered it in 100 feet of rubble. Almost every single person from this people group was dead. This was one of our people that we were focused on. And I was reminded at that point of God's promise that someone from every tribe, every tongue, and every nation will be at the foot of Jesus. We have a team from our home church joining us on this journey. My sending church has been a vital part of my story. I was discipled from this church. Without them, I wouldn't even be here. I will be trekking for 3 days, demonstrate our love and care we have for the people of this valley, just helping them rebuild their houses. Everything was wrecked, everything was destroyed, everything was ruined. I had nothing in one moment. Boom! Everything was changed. But God is using that earthquake. God restores people. God makes things new. Start fresh spiritually with a relationship with Christ. People that never heard are going to come to know him. We have an opportunity to share in a way that we never could have shared. We have that hope to give people. So don't waste those opportunities. Use it for what God has for us to do.
So during this season of the year, we typically focus on our Lottie Moon offering, the offering that we take that supports our international mission efforts. Because we support and contribute to those who go farther and wider than we can go, touch lives of people that we don't know in places that we'll never go, like Nepal, like Mexico, like China, like to the far ends of the earth. But rest assured, this is not a 20-minute commercial for the Lottie Moon offering. Because if the only way you tell this remarkable, incredible story is through a contribution to Lottie Moon or any other mission organization, you are missing out. Because we should support those places, and we should support the people that go to those places, because they are taking the gospel far and wide. But it is our responsibility to share this story. This story of faithfulness spread, God's faithfulness, because the people that heard it could not contain themselves. We'll see later in the story as we read it as the month progresses, shepherds and wise men that heard this story and they could not contain their excitement. They ran through the streets. They took alternate routes to avoid danger. They had to get the story out. We talked a few weeks ago as we talked about the authenticity of Scripture, how Matthew, Mark, and Luke, and John were so convinced of this story and so moved and inspired by the story that they wrote it down. They wrote it down, and then people were so excited about this story that they copied it meticulously over and over and over and over at a time period where it did not make any financial sense to copy something over and over and over and over, but they knew the story was so important. And if we truly believe that our hope and our redemption is wrapped up in the Prince of Peace, we will share that story too. Because let's face it, we are oftentimes people of abundance. And it's easier to write a check than tell a story. So I would encourage you to support international mission efforts. That's kind of what this month is about. But I would encourage you to find a way to share your story. Because it is a story that did not get birthed into existence with you or with your parents or at the turn of this century or the last. It is a story of God's faithfulness for thousands of years. A story that we can only believe because it is so remarkable. Because God moved in and out of the lives of people and individuals and families. Powerful kings, powerful rulers, once mighty nations, are footnotes, are merely an asterisk in the most important story ever told, the story of the arrival of the Prince of Peace. So how will you share your story? How will you tell of God's faithfulness in your own life and in the lives of others? By supporting those who share the gospel, by telling your story, or even in the simple act of doing something, as we talked a couple weeks ago, for the least of those around us. That is what the peace that Jesus spoke of, the peace that he left with us, motivates us to do, to tell the story. And we cannot be afraid. We cannot be troubled, because the story will often take us places that we didn't think we would go. It would put us in situations we didn't think we would be in. But if we truly believe it is the most important story, we will find a way to share it.